The opinions expressed on the following program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Hello, everyone. This is Tracy welcoming you to Everyday Health, an Audio Journal program in which we share information about healthy living. This broadcast is for informational purposes only, and suggestions should always be discussed with your healthcare providers. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. In this broadcast, we're going to explore the human heart and the human mind. To begin, we'll share an hourly schedule to help benefit your heart from writer Caitlin Carlson. A few additional matters of the heart will follow from an article by writer Jenny Brown. The second half of our program are going to be two psychological pieces, one from Chris Kander about how to reframe being rejected. And today's tip will be from Psychology Today and writer Dr. Megan Dalla Camina about our inner critics. So to start, let's take a look at our heart. Judging from nearly every pop song ever written, humans are obsessed with our hearts, metaphorically speaking. But the actual physical organ, well, many of us go through the day without giving it much thought. But we should. According to the CDC, about 44% of women in the United States have some form of heart disease, which kills more women annually than all cancers combined. Even if you've always had good blood pressure, which is linked to a lower risk of heart problems, that can change when you begin menopause, says Dr. Catherine Rexrode, chief of the Division of Women's Health at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Estrogen helps blood vessels relax and dilate, and when the hormone declines during perimenopause, vessels can constrict, increasing blood pressure. Menopause-related weight gain and other hormone changes may also contribute to a rise in your numbers, including your cholesterol levels, another indicator of heart health, Dr. Rexrode says. Now, we know lifestyle tweaks can help protect our hearts, and they can do so at any age. Here, we lay out some of the simplest and most effective science-based backed strategies in an hour-by-hour guide. Now, don't feel like you've got to follow the schedule to a T. Just get going. And if you falter, give yourself a little grace and try again, says Dr. Smadar Kort, co-director of the Valve Center at the Stony Brook Heart Institute on Long Island, New York. Every step you make in the right direction is important and makes a difference. So let's start out at 7 a.m. Eat produce. What to have for breakfast? Make it something plant-based or at least plant-heavy. When you eat lots of fruits and vegetables, overall your risk of heart disease is lower, says Dr. Rexrode, who co-authored a study on the link between healthy eating and a reduced risk of cardiovascular issues. Eat a variety of fruits and vegetables, about 4 or 5 servings every day, per day. That's 8 to 10 servings total, as recommended by the DASH eating plan, which we've discussed before on this podcast. That was created by health professionals to help lower blood pressure. If you need meal inspiration, Michelle Rauthenstein, a registered dietitian who specializes in heart health at Entirely Nourished New York City, likes to have oatmeal with fresh or frozen blueberries or other seasonal fruit and walnuts. The fiber from the berries and the oats help support healthy cholesterol levels, and the walnuts have omega-3 fatty acids and vitamin E to help reduce chronic inflammation, which of course is a risk factor for heart disease. Now it's 8 o'clock. Brush your teeth and don't forget to floss. Good oral hygiene, we know, helps prevent plaque buildup on one's teeth, and plaque is not just unsightly. Here's the problem. It can lead to chronic inflammation, says Dr. Kort, and in some cases, it can even enter one's bloodstream and reach the coronary arteries. The official recommendation is twice daily brushing, daily flossing, and twice yearly visits to our dentists. But a 2024 review in the American Journal of Medicine highlights that a study found that brushing just once a day and visiting the dentist for a cleaning only once a year, even that reduced cardiovascular disease risk by 9% and 14%, respectively. Next, fill up your water bottle. It's 9 o'clock, and in addition to being essential for overall health, staying hydrated helps the heart pump blood more easily through the body. When you don't drink enough water, your heart has to work harder, which can lead to increased or irregular heartbeats. Rothenstein recommends drinking between 2.5 to 3 liters of water a day, more if you're vigorously exercising or otherwise sweating a lot. And consider switching to a non-plastic refillable bottle. We know that there's data that suggests that microplastics can leach from containers into our water, and early research has linked microplastics to chronic health conditions. A 2024 study of 257 people, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, showed that those who had microplastics in the blood vessels near their necks were 4.5 times more likely to suffer a heart attack or a stroke. Now it's 10 o'clock in the morning. Hit the gym, or your living room, or your yard, or a neighborhood walking path. While both the American Heart Association and Dr. Rex Rode note that exercise at any time of day is beneficial, there may be a sweet spot. In a 2025 study of older adults published in Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, exercising earlier in the day was associated with better cardiorespiratory fitness, how well your circulatory and respiratory systems supply oxygen to your muscles. Lower levels of oxygen are linked to a higher risk of heart disease. Exercise does so much because it's a way of keeping our blood vessels healthy and responsive, Dr. Rex Rode says. Getting your heart rate up helps push more blood through your arteries, and that keeps them wider and more flexible. It can also help lower cholesterol, blood pressure, body fat, all of which can lower the risk of heart disease. Aim for these American Heart Association recommendations. Do the 150 minutes a week of moderately intense aerobic activity. Just think of walking briskly, which you can do in your home, or 75 minutes of vigorous activity like running, and add in that resistance or strength training or both at least 2 days a week. That can help with your heart health. Now, this could be yoga, barre, free weights, whatever activity that you like enough to stick to. If you have any injuries or limitations or diseases, talk with your physician, please, before you start any new exercise program. All right, you've made it to noon. Have a healthy lunch that you'll actually enjoy. Now, lunch, we know, can be an afterthought during a busy day, but it's an important meal, says Dr. Rothenstein. A balanced, nourishing lunch helps stabilize energy levels. It curbs cravings, and it supports consistent, heart-healthy eating. The catch? It's really got to be something that you like. If you don't like it, you just won't continue to eat it, says Dr. Rothenstein. And eating any kind of diet has to be sustainable in order for it to be effective. As a good starting point, try an antioxidant-rich salad full of various produce, more heart-healthy fiber, and some salmon, which we all know is packed with omega-3 fatty acids. Can't quite choke that down? All right, try roasting some vegetables to bring out their natural sweetness and crisp up the texture. You can add veggies to dishes you already like pasta, soups, stir fries, or even egg scrambles. All right, you've had your lunch. It's 1 o'clock. Get out for a walk. It only needs to be 15 minutes. You'll work toward hitting those aerobic activity goals, and research suggests that short bouts of cardiovascular fitness have similar benefits to longer sessions. A couple of 10-minute fast, brisk walks between meetings can be just as good as a 30-minute walk 5 times a week, but speed does matter. A 2025 study in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine found that taking walks at a brisk pace, as in faster than walking your dog, For 15 minutes, it reduces risk of dying prematurely from any cause, including cardiovascular disease, by, get this, 20%. That's compared with a 4% risk reduction from long, slow walks. All right, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for you to grab an afternoon snack. Shoot for something that's got fiber and healthy fat, such as nuts and seeds. The ideal combo for blood sugar and control of that and satiation. A mid-afternoon snack, Dr. Rothenstein recommends, is also a good opportunity to get in another serving of fruit or veggies. Consider carrots and hummus, or an apple with peanut butter. It's 4 o'clock now. Stand up and move. Actually, you should try to do this all day long. Dr. Court recommends getting up often, every hour if you possibly can, even if it's just to take a few steps before you sit back down. Everything you do to break up sitting sessions is very, very important, she says. In one recent Columbia University study, people who walked for 1 minute, 1 minute, every 30 minutes, saw reductions in their blood pressure compared with those who were sedentary. Okay, it's 5 p.m. now. Take a few deep breaths. We know that when people are stressed, it changes their hormones and can lead to muscle tightness and higher blood pressure. Tapping into our parasympathetic nervous systems, that rest and digest counterpart to the fight or flight sympathetic nervous system, is key to preventing this. Just take a few moments, sit in a comfortable position, and focus on your breathing, Dr. Court advises. Studies show that deep breathing can trigger your body's relaxation response and induce a sense of calm. Of course, you can also try a breathing meditation. Use a mindfulness app such as Calm, Headspace, Waking Up, or my personal favorite, Insight Timer. All right, it's 7 o'clock. Mix up your protein sources at dinner. People need more protein as they age to maintain muscle mass. Women who are 65 and over should aim for about 0.54 grams to 0.68 grams of protein per pound of body weight, while women younger only need about 0.36 to 0.45 grams of pound per body weight. And there's research to support switching up how you get it. A 2022 study of more than 12,000 Chinese adults found that consuming a larger variety of protein sources was actually associated with a reduced risk of high blood pressure. The researchers theorize that more options can help you get different essential amino acids, which are those building blocks of protein that keep our body functioning, digesting, making soft tissue, providing immunity, and so on. Lean proteins like fish, poultry, tofu, beans, and legumes are also excellent choices. It's 8 o'clock now and you've done the dishes. It's time for you to hang out with your friends and family. Our experts emphasize the importance of social connection when it comes to heart health. Spend time with people you love and enjoy, Dr. Court recommends. Research published in the Journal of the American Heart Association found strong evidence that loneliness leads to an increased risk of heart disease, possibly because of related stress. So reach out, call someone, be in touch. 9 o'clock. It's time to wind down with some meditation. Now, similar to deep breathing, meditation taps into that wonderful parasympathetic nervous system and potentially lowers our heart rate and relaxes blood vessels, according to Dr. Rex Rode. Meditation before bed may be particularly beneficial as stress can interfere with sleep. And here's an important line. Consistency is more important than length, so even 5 minutes a night is great. I want to repeat that. Consistency is more important than length. Even 5 minutes a night is great. While experts, of course, generally recommend against using one's phone in bed, many say it's a-okay if you're playing a guided meditation. It's 10 o'clock now. Go to bed. there's increasing evidence that short sleep duration and or poor sleep quality have a negative impact on one's heart, says Dr. Rex Rode. Your body restores itself while you sleep, including regulating your blood pressure. Lots of factors mess with our sleep. Stress, sleep apnea, hot flashes, you know the basics. Try to follow a regular schedule, limit alcohol, and avoid blue light from devices before bedtime. If these strategies just don't work or feel unrealistic to you, please speak to your doctor. Sleep is the drug our body really needs, says Dr. Rex Rode. To show your heart some love, prioritize getting a hefty dose of it every night. And now, our next article, Matters of the Heart, by Jenny Brown. Many people think that the heart is on the left side of the chest. Well, that's where we put our hand during the Pledge of Allegiance, after all. But it's actually in the center, between the lungs. We just feel it beat more powerfully on the left. And here's why. The right side of the roughly fist-sized muscular organ pumps blood into the lungs to be filled with oxygen. The oxygen-rich blood then travels into the thicker, larger left side, which, with an extremely strong contraction, strong enough actually to spurt water 5 feet into the air, sends that blood out to deliver oxygen to almost the entire body. Deoxygenated blood comes back to the right side of the heart to restart the cycle. That journey takes about 1 minute. That's the heart pumping about every second to maintain the flow, fueled by its own electricity-making cells. That's Anatomy 101. Next, here's a little history lesson, more science, and a wee bit of art. Early cultures, including the Chinese, the Egyptians, the Indians, the Greeks, and the Romans, thought that the heart was the source of all intelligence and emotions, even being the seat of our souls. The Egyptians, during mummification, would often discard the brain but leave the heart, believing that it held a record of the person's deeds. The English physician William Harvey is famous for finally figuring out the heart's anatomy in the 1600s, though unbeknownst to the Western world at the time. The Syrian scholar Ibn al-Nafis had already done so about 300 years before that. At any rate, after people understood its mechanics, the heart was viewed as a mere pump, no longer a mystical ruler of the body. But it is a source of emotions. The ancients were kind of right about this one. Scientists have discovered a cluster of neurons in the heart that acts as a little brain, as it's affectionately called. It not only receives information from the brain in our head, pump faster because something scary is happening, it also sends information back up to the brain. The heart is beating really fast. Sometimes your brain will translate these messages as emotions. For example, an irregular heartbeat has been known to trigger panic attacks. And lastly, the heart shape is a mystery. Called a cardioid, that symbol of a heart that we all know, recognizing with two halves, began symbolizing the heart in art of the Middle Ages. And while theories abound as to why, we still don't really know. One interesting idea is that it resembles the seed of the extinct psyllium plant, once used as a contraceptive. Or maybe it's just a crude rendering of what medieval people thought the heart looked like, given that the very first person to draw it in all its complexity was none other than Leonardo da Vinci in the 1500s. Now for the second part of our program. Anytime someone is rejected, it is painful. As Jessica Bacall, a doctor of education and editor of The Rejection That Changed My Life, writes, rejections do not go on your resume, but they are part of every successful person's experience. I was crushed when I was passed over for a job in a department at the college I worked at, in a department I created. I decided to stay and ended up in a role that was created for me. I'm happier now than I could have ever imagined, and I've learned not to think of rejection as a devastating end, but as a useful step on the path to a new beginning. Dawoon Kang, the chief dating officer of the dating app Coffee Meets Bagel, writes, "If my clients want a great relationship, I remind them to stay attached to that goal, rather to any one person. If the person you thought was fabulous turns out to be ill-fitting for you, you wouldn't insist on staying in a friendship with them, would you? You pause and confidently regroup, saying yes to the next person and learning. And lastly, don't take it personally." From Angela Duckworth, PhD and co-founder and CEO of Character Lab, a nonprofit educational research group, says that leaders should always focus their feedback on someone's work, not the individual. This is called process criticism. Praise should be offered in a similarly detached way, and a person being reviewed should separate their ego from the message. It's natural to feel hurt if you are rejected, but if you focus on the constructive aspect of any criticism, it is a growth opportunity. And of course, that's not easy if your inner critic bothers you. From Dr. Megan Dalla Kamina, she writes that we all have that voice, that judgmental voice that says, "Oh, you're not ready, and you should be further along by now, and don't mess it up." That voice questions your decisions, undercuts your confidence, and makes you shrink right when you are about to rise. That voice is the inner critic. Now, know this, your inner critic is not your intuition. Intuition speaks with calm clarity. It might guide you away from something, but it will not shame you, and it will not belittle you. Your inner critic, on the other hand, is fueled by fear, perfectionism, and old programming. It's trying to keep you small in the name of staying safe. And the more you grow, the louder that voice can get, especially when you're stepping into something new. Now, the goal isn't to silence the inner critic. It's to quiet it down and begin to challenge the cognitive dissonance that it creates. We want to create enough space between the voice and your truth so you get close and clear about choosing who's in charge. How do you do it? 3 steps. Number 1, name that voice. Is it the perfectionist coming to you in your mind, the people pleaser, the overachiever? When you name it, you separate from it. You realize it is a voice, not your voice. Try saying, "Thanks for your input." Insert the name you've given this voice, "but I've got this." Number 2, gather the evidence. Challenge that inner voice by asking, "Is this really true? What's the actual evidence? What would I say to a friend who was thinking about this?" You'll often find that the critic has a lot of opinions, but very little proof. Number 3, anchor into your inner leader. One of the most powerful ways to quiet the critic is to strengthen another voice, your inner leader. This voice is grounded, wise, compassionate, and clear. It's the part of you that knows what your values are, it trusts your experience, and it can see the bigger picture. When your critic says you're not ready, the inner leader says, "You've done the work, you're allowed to grow." And the more you practice listening to that inner leader, the more your confidence will become embodied, not performative. You do not have to get rid of your inner critic to move forward. You just have to stop giving it the final say. You are not the voice that doubts. You are the one who just simply notices it and then chooses differently. And that concludes our broadcast for today. Remember, by making small adjustments and embracing healthy habits, you can lead a fulfilling and health-conscious life. Thank you again for joining us. Our broadcast is for informational purposes only, and any suggestions should always be discussed with your healthcare providers. Our program is a production of Audio Journal, and we're a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you'd like a hard copy, either in large print or braille, of our program guide, please call us at 508-797-1117. Archived editions are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Tracy, and thanks for listening. We wish you health every day.
And now, Medical Myths and Facts with Dr. Richard Curtis.
For more than 200 years, the stethoscope has symbolized the physician. But medicine may now be entering another major transition, one in which portable ultrasound increasingly becomes an extension of the physical exam. Advances in miniaturization and artificial intelligence have made handheld ultrasound devices dramatically smaller, less expensive, and easier to use. Some now connect directly to smartphones or tablets and can fit into a coat pocket. Many physicians are beginning to use them at the bedside, much the way earlier generations used a stethoscope. The concept is called point-of-care ultrasound, or POCUS. Instead of relying solely on listening, tapping, and waiting for formal imaging studies, clinicians can now immediately visualize anatomy and physiology in real time. A physician evaluating shortness of breath, for example, can rapidly look for pleural effusions, pulmonary edema, pneumothorax, or cardiac dysfunction. In abdominal pain, bedside ultrasound may identify gallstones, urinary retention, hydronephrosis, ascites, or even bowel abnormalities. In cardiology, clinicians can quickly estimate ventricular function or identify swelling of the heart within minutes. In emergency medicine and critical care, ultrasound has already become deeply integrated into daily practice. It guides procedures such as central line placement, thoracentesis, paracentesis, and abscess drainage with greater precision and safety. Increasingly, internists, hospitalists, anesthesiologists, rheumatologists, nephrologists, obstetricians, and gastroenterologists are incorporating bedside ultrasound into routine care as well. Artificial intelligence may accelerate this transition even further. Newer systems can help identify structures, optimize probe positioning, and assist interpretation for less experienced users. Some experts believe AI-guided ultrasound may eventually allow broader use by primary care physicians in underserved regions. Medical education is changing in response. Many medical schools now teach ultrasound anatomy alongside traditional cadaver anatomy. Some students learn cardiac ultrasound before they become fully proficient with auscultation. But this evolution also raises important questions. Ultrasound is highly operator-dependent. Poor training can lead to overconfidence, missed findings, or incidental abnormalities that create anxiety and unnecessary testing. Many experts emphasize that ultrasound should augment, not replace, clinical reasoning and traditional examination skills. There are also broader implications for healthcare systems. Portable ultrasound may improve access in rural medicine, global health, nursing homes, and home-based care. It could reduce delays, lower some imaging costs, and speed diagnosis in time-sensitive conditions. The deeper significance may be philosophical. The stethoscope allowed physicians to hear inside the body. Portable ultrasound allows them to see inside the body instantly at the bedside. That represents one of the most profound shifts in the physical examination since the invention of the stethoscope itself 200 years ago. So while the stethoscope is unlikely to disappear anytime soon, the next iconic image of medicine may increasingly be a physician holding not just a stethoscope, but an ultrasound probe connected to a smartphone.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.